I have a surprise for you right off the bat.
Okay.
Have you noticed me? I've been a little timid since you've been here because I have a surprise.
Okay.
Don't get excited. It's not a real surprise. Basically, just I'm looking at my queue. Is that the word for line?
Yeah.
To be on the podcast. Like, I'm starting to get people are starting to request being on the podcast, which is kind of cool. But also, like, I'm literally booked till like July right now.
Awesome.
So I'm just going to do this as a bonus episode and release it right now. Like, awesome. It's going to come out right now. Awesome. And it'll just be very on my, cool. I'm just going to push it out, be on people's feeds. Cool. You might be able to listen to it on your way home.
Awesome.
Because also I want to talk about some current events.
Yeah.
For example, are you a hockey guy?
Yeah. I like watching hockey.
Sabres game last night.
Yes.
I don't know anything about hockey. I have not watched it my whole life, but I, you know, a good bandwagon guy, you know, I'm a Western New Yorker now. So like I got into the Sabres over the last few weeks. Bandwagon, listen, I admit it, bandwagon, I admit it, but I've just never been a hockey guy before. I don't even know the rules. Like, for example, it seems like little things get them in the penalty box, but then they can just literally punch each other and that's no problem. Like, I'm so confused by the rules. But my big question is, and because I don't know any hockey people and I've had a busy day, did the Sabres get screwed last night? In the third period, it looked like the ref blew a whistle that he shouldn't have blown because the puck was still free. Am I right or wrong?
I'll be honest with you. Yeah. You're going to get a whole bunch of boos probably from this comment. But I was out on the boat last night.
Oh,
and
boo.
So I did not watch the hockey.
Boo. Yep. I'll boo you, boo.
Yep. It was a good night to be out on Ronicoy Bay. It was beautiful.
All right. The way I understand it is the goalie has to like smush the puck and then they blow the play dead, right? But in this case, the puck wasn't smushed yet and it's just sitting there and the Sabre guy hit it in the net. And then that was it. And then they go, oh, well, we thought the goalie had it, so we blew it dead. And since we blew it dead, the goal doesn't count. And I'm going, they would have won the game. But I don't, like, I've been asking people about it all day, and nobody seems to, like, are the Sabres not as popular as I thought they were? It's like, everyone I talked to today, even you, has been like, I don't know. They played last night? I'm like, who the hell am I hanging out with?
Yeah, I guess that's the part of being stuck between Rochester and Buffalo, right? Like, I feel like if you're in Buffalo proper, everybody and their brother was watching that game last night.
Yes.
But in Rochester, we were out enjoying the warm weather.
Yeah, I mean, what lake are you on?
Well, I belong to Fleet Boat Club.
Oh.
And so one of the best things I ever did, because we owned a boat in my 20s, you know, I thought I was a cool guy. I went out and bought a speedboat.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasted a bunch of money, had kids, boat sat in the driveway.
Yeah.
And then we found this Fleet Boat Club, and it's a local guy that owns a fleet of boats. They're on Aranaque Bay, Sodus, Canandaigua, Keuka, Seneca, and the Erie Canal in Fairport.
Oh,
which I didn't think I was going to love the Erie Canal in Fairport, but we did it last year in the fall.
Yeah.
We took a pontoon boat out. We putzed all the way down the canal for hours and just enjoyed like a very leisurely stroll.
How does it work? You pay a fee and you can
basically... Yeah, you pay a fee and then you get so many slots on the calendar. And then every week I book my times that I want to take boats out and where I want to take them out.
Yeah.
And then after you consume one, you can put another one back on the calendar.
Oh,
and
bro.
You just, so this is like my fourth year in the club and like the cost of owning a boat. I just said to my wife last night that I think I would have to be a member of the club for like 25 years to get to a point where it cost me the same as owning a boat with all the with all the slip and the maintenance and all that
you
stuff.
You don't have to do the maintenance. That's the best part, right?
Yeah, and in the end, I don't end up owning an old crappy boat.
Yeah. You don't also have to figure out where to park it in the off season and all that shit.
So nice.
Like, yeah, like
you
I
go
mean,
down and you literally get on the boat, you go out, you have a good time, you come back, they gas it up, they clean it, they cover it. Like you just walk away. Like one time, you know, I hope Ken's not listening. One time I was out at Sodus and I kind of stumbled and my big fat leg broke the key off in the ignition.
Oh,
now,
no.
Now, if that was my boat, I would have been freaking out. And I felt very bad. I called them. I was like, hey, this is what just happened. They're like, okay, cool. Just leave it. Walked away. They didn't even charge me a fee. They just like...
Pretty good.
Yeah.
That's nice.
It's a great... Yeah. So that's what
we
were doing
nice
last night.
Nice little program. Yeah. I like it. I would. I just don't know how to drive a boat. The parking scares me. You know, like you have to like just aim and hope for the best. I don't quite know.
Yeah. It's a skill that you definitely pick up. The water was cold last night. We were out on Lake Ontario and Aranaque Bay.
Nice.
Water was cold, but the air was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was just a great night to be out on the water.
It's great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. One other thing before we get to Mocha. Yeah, because Mocha is launched.
Yes.
It's here.
Yes.
One other thing. Can you give me And it's going to be hard for you because you're going to want to be nice. But I want a real, honest review. Saturday night, Holy Childhood Gala. The gala, of course, was fantastic, right? Yes, I mean, the food, it was at Oak Hill in their new conference room. Ballroom. Just an amazing night. They raised a ton of money for a beautiful cause. New York State Food Processors was a sponsor. I saw mocha candles on the table. You were all over the place. You and your beautiful wife were there. It was great to see you. But in regards to the MC, can I get an honest review? Please, and don't feel like you have to be kind.
Yes, I think I've told you this, and I say this every time I find out you're the MC of an event.
Yeah.
It takes the event to the next level for me. I really do enjoy, I enjoy your humor. You know you're good at it, right? Like, so people love listening to you. You just have a very authentic, transparent, like you, one of the things that like I've tried to emulate since I've met you is just trying to be myself and be comfortable being who I am. Because when you get up and you speak, that's what comes through, is like, you're not trying to put on a mask to like appease a certain part of the crowd. Like, you just get up there and you are yourself.
Yeah.
And as a result, people love it. Like, they love it. And I think it's just that really like authentic, vulnerable.
You know what? That's what I learned from Brother Weez. It was just authenticity at all times. And there's this thing that people feel pressured to do, which is to be perfectly polished. And nobody is perfectly polished. Nobody is. So just go out there and make a mistake or two and laugh at yourself when you make the mistake or two. And most people can relate to that. They're like, yeah, I would have made that mistake too. I don't know how it's pronounced. Wait, can we run through some of the jokes though? I want to know if the jokes were funny.
it was super enjoyable.
It was an evening to honor Tom Golisano. Yes. So at the beginning, I did start off by like pretending I didn't know how to pronounce his name. I was like, is it Golisano? It is Golisano. I was like, it's important. It's important to get that one right. It's in the script a lot. I just want to make sure it is. Okay, let's go. And then I had his book, which he has got a couple books, but the one is called The Italian Kid Did It. So I held up the book and I talked about how I love the book. A lot of good entrepreneurial lessons. The only thing I don't like is the title, The Italian Kid Did It, because that is exactly what my next door neighbor, when I was a kid, used to scream at me when I would run through the garden. There was also a prom going on there.
Yes.
And so I made a joke, something along the lines of like, the Cougars need to be carding. Like, if the Cougars are like, just make sure if you find a nice young man in the hallways and start flirting, Cougars, please card. There is a prom.
I joked with my wife. I think I was the only guy that bought his wife a wrist corsage. I thought when it said black tie optional, I was like, all right, I don't ever get to go to black tie events, so I'm going super formal. So I went with the whole black tie.
Yeah.
And my wife wore a nice gown, and I thought, this would be a nice opportunity. We never got to go to prom together. We've been married 22 years this year. We've been together 26 years.
Okay.
And so I treated it like prom. I got a wrist corsage. Yeah, and we took photos at the house. And, yeah.
Does anybody do adult prom as a theme for their gala? That might be a decent idea for a... Although, I guess it's... What would be the... Well, you got to get a DJ. And the DJ has to talk like this in order
for... It would have been great. Like, that's the one... So the event was awesome. The food was out of this world. So, you know, so I was in hospitality for a lot of years at the Woodcliffe, and so fine dining is like right up my sweet spot. And man, that chef and the chefs he has working with him were so talented. So like, that food was out of this world.
Yeah, it was so good. They did like a 5-course thing, and the final course, the dessert was like it was a lump crab soup, and then there was a lobster cavatelli, there was a beet salad, then there was your choice of entree. I had the sea bass. There
Me
was
too.
Also,
wasn't that sea bass good?
So melt in your mouth. Yeah. Then there was filet, and then there was, I think, an eggplant dish for vegetarian. And then the dessert was elevated peanut butter and jelly, which I couldn't wait to see what this was. And it was basically like emulsified, I might call it, peanut butter and jelly together in a custard dish, chilled, so it was like custard, and then had like heavy cream on top. So good. Wine pairings with every course.
So did you find it interesting? So I rarely get the beef because I feel like I do agree that like there are definitely obviously different cuts of beef and different grades of beef and different ways to prepare it. Like, you know, if you go down to Char at Strathallan, like they have a special rig that they're like hitting the steak with at some crazy temperature to sear it. So I get all that. But to me, like, steak is steak.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I always go for the other dish, the sea bass, because I felt like there's so much more that they can do to that sea bass to make it
similar. I have a similar story. Like, so steak is steak is steak. I do agree. Don't get me wrong. Love going to a steakhouse, but I can make a pretty good steak at home. Seafoods, I've never been my specialty at home. So like if a really good chef is going to prepare a seafood dish, I'm going to order that every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that for sure. One other, I'll tell you my jokes that didn't work. I had two that didn't work. All right. So two that didn't work were, well, first of all, I always start off with the low hanging fruit. My name is Paulie Guglielmo and I am here probably because Don Alhart was busy.
That was a good one.
But
that
it's
was
an easy one.
That, got a good laugh. Like I feel like a bunch of people, it was like kind of a weird, like half the room got it and the other half of the room, I don't know if it was like they weren't listening.
They thought, yeah, they thought I was serious. They're like, it's Don.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I noticed like there was like a big like roar over like in one section. And then like, I was like, that's interesting. I thought that was hilarious.
All right. So the jokes that did not work though, there were two. So one was where I said, Tom Golisano and I have a lot in common. Long Italian last name, start with a G, end and O. We both have to be up early to make sauce tomorrow. We both married women way above our pay grade, which is impressive for him because he like invented pay grades. And then I ended by saying, and we both have billions of dollars. And like that just died. Nobody laughed at that.
That one, again, though, I don't know if it's a listening thing. Cause like,
maybe,
I don't know if you noticed like in the beginning, like even father couldn't, the priest couldn't, couldn't get people to like,
dude, usually the prayer always gets people to quiet down, but he could. Yeah. And then the last thing, the last joke that didn't work. And then we got to talk about Mocha, is that, you know, this was a tough one to make. And I wanted to make this joke so bad and I went light on it. So maybe I should have just went harder on it. But just the previous day, it had been decided that Oak Hill won their lawsuit that they've been in.
Okay.
Do you know about this? No. See, that's, I think, why it didn't work. I think maybe a lot of people don't know about it. Oak Hill was in a lawsuit. Look it up. I'm not going to sit here and explain the whole thing. But basically, they have a former member who was suing them. He was booted off the board. I think he's still a member, but he was booted off the board. And they had some real division inside Oak Hill over this thing. Like, some members were on this side and some members were on that side. And they were suing. Basically, Oak Hill members were suing Oak Hill. And Oak Hill, the club, won the lawsuit on Friday, the day before the gala. So I made a joke about how, about the staff and how they're all just so great. They've got an extra pep in their step. They're so happy. It's like they got great news or something. I don't understand. And like, just nobody laughed. And
I didn't, yeah, I didn't, I think I don't know that I caught it.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't know about the lawsuit. So yeah, I didn't.
I should have said, the original version in my head was the same buildup, but then I was going to end it by saying something like, you know, did you guys win a lawsuit or something recently? Like, just to make it more obvious what I was talking about. Yeah, but I think it just either wasn't funny or people had no idea what I was talking about.
I'm terrible on current events because I get all my news through like either podcasts or, which usually aren't like, that's not live news, right?
Yeah.
And the little bit of stuff that like, the very little bit of stuff that I pay attention to on social media. But like, I don't have cable television. I stream everything. I'm a big like Netflix and Apple TV guy. So I'm like living off in a world of like nothing current event wise.
Yeah.
So I don't hear about a lot of the stuff that goes on.
Wait, there was one more. Can I have time
for one? Yeah.
All right. So I do these cat, you know, you do the cash call.
Yes.
Where you're asking people for a bunch of money and they raise their hand. And by the way, this cash call was fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah.
They had a $25,000 anonymous donation. They had a $25,000 match from Glover Krask. They had a $50,000 donation from a foundation that's slipping my mind, and I am so sorry to them because it slipped my mind. And then the owner of West Her Automotive just comes up, and I see him out of the corner of my eye, and he's walking towards me. And then he just comes and he stands on the side of the stage, and he's not even looking at me. I look at him, and he doesn't make eye contact with me. And I'm kind of like, he's just standing there, and I get the hint that he's about to make an announcement. So I just look at him, I just go, sir, and I just give him the podium. And like, that could go either way.
That was all ad lib. That wasn't
all ad lib. Oh, wow. Not planned at all. I didn't know he was coming.
Wow.
I didn't know he was going to come up to the stage. And frankly, I mean, he's obviously like to be trusted. It's not like some random guy walked in from outside and said, I'd like to be at the podium. It's obviously I had a really good idea of what he was about to do, but I didn't know for sure what he was about to do. And he got up to the podium and he donated $100,000.
Wow.
To School of the Holy Childhood. Wow. Completely unannounced.
Wow.
I think like there was probably some feeling he was going to do something, but nobody thought it was going to be $100,000.
That's amazing. Incredible. That makes me feel even better. I bought my vehicle from West Her. Mm. Nathan, great experience. I bought a Honda Accord through them.
Nice.
And I would go back again and again. They just, the whole experience was great. And then like, because I had to wait, like, you know, supply chains are messed up. I had to wait like a couple of extra weeks to get the car. They kept apologizing. I'm like, guys, like, it is what it is. Like, you know, like, they felt so bad that they invited me to their company appreciation party, mm-hmm. employee appreciation party, which was a concert at Darien Lake with Carrie Underwood, a private concert.
I heard about that.
With Carrie Underwood.
Yeah.
And they're like, here, to apologize for the delay. I'm like, yeah. I mean, okay. So I brought my wife and my kid. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, what car dealership goes, like, cares yeah. that much that yeah. they call you on a regular basis to apologize and make sure you're cool and then say, like, hey,
damn right.
to show you that we appreciate you as a customer, come to a free concert on us.
Damn like, right, man.
Wow.
That's, bless her.
Yeah, that is stepping up and then showing up and making a $100,000 donation. Like,
yeah,
makes
you feel good about awesome. Where you're spending your money. When you see where they're spending their money, it makes yeah. you feel good about where you're spending yours. You know, it's just I thought it was great. So yeah. If you are listening to this podcast right now and going, wait a second, who is this guy? What is Mocha? I don't know. Scroll back a few months and go back. It might be interesting for you to listen to the first part with Tom, because when Tom was here a few months ago, we did your whole story. We're going to skip the story this time. It's a bonus episode anyway. We'll just get to kind of current events right yeah. now. But if you'd like to, for the context, this would be a great time to go listen to that. You'll hear Tom's whole backstory. And that podcast ends when you're just about to launch Mocha. Yes. For context, if you could just say, what exactly is Mocha?
Yeah, yeah. So we have innovated and created a product here in Rochester, New York, that transforms the cup of coffee into a bar that has the same amount of caffeine content as a cup of coffee.
Nice.
But it looks like and feels like chocolate. But it doesn't contain any chocolate. It's all coffee made from real coffee, no chocolate in the recipe. So you're getting that great textural experience of chocolate, but you're getting the flavor of coffee and the caffeine of coffee using a functional and clean label formula in a portable format that you can have anytime, anywhere.
Yep.
And really looking at, like, when coffee's not accessible or practical, you can have a Mocha Energy Bar and get a healthy snack and a cup of coffee and your caffeine buzz all in one shot.
Definitely. So I do usually do 3 cups of coffee a day. When I have a Mocha on me, it's 2 cups and a Mocha.
Yeah, I'm interested to do a little bit more research as we go along and more kind of resources become available to us to understand the difference in eating coffee, whole coffee, because that's what you're doing. You're eating whole coffee. And the difference in the caffeine buzz, it's more steady and stable, less up and down, not as shaky and crash driven. So it's an interesting, so many people that have tried it have said, actually, they get the same buzz from a cup of coffee as they do from half a bar. So like it sounds to me like there is a correlation between eating the whole coffee bean, the efficiency of the caffeine and how it digests when it's in a food formula as opposed to in a liquid brewed formula. So I'm super interested to continue to
cool.
learn more about, you know, the impact of the caffeine.
Yeah, yeah.
Because obviously that's a big piece of the product, is that energy buzz and the energy behind it, but also that it's a healthy, clean snack that is fueling your body with good nutrients and good ingredients. And it's cool. been a really exciting ride, and so much has changed even since we spoke just back in the fall.
Well, okay, so you had to get this thing launched, you had to go into production, and then you had to go out and do the cold calling. Now, you've been in sales your whole life.
Yes.
Which is fantastic. So this was natural to you. You also have thick skin. You
know, yeah, right? I'm very used to hearing no.
Very used to hearing no.
It wasn't just my wife and every girlfriend that I ever had. It's been every door I've knocked on my whole life is like, and so that gets you to the point of understanding that, like, life is a game of no's, and you have to hear it so yeah. many times before you hear a yes.
But it is what separates successful, I think, entrepreneurs, is that successful entrepreneurs are able to just plow through those no's, where some people just can't. Rejection's hard. It is yeah. hard. And it's hard even for me. I mean, it's not like I ever get to the point where it doesn't faze me. It hurts. It sucks every time. But, like, there's some people who really can't handle rejection, and this just, world's just not for them.
So recently, I won't necessarily say the name, but recently I had a retailer that I was engaged with, and they said they were interested in taking in the product. And then they asked me to follow up a couple weeks later, and I followed up, and they said, you know what? We've had a change of heart. We don't think we're interested, like, appreciate it, but no thanks. And my email back was, I'm not taking no for an answer. I think that like a $200 investment in my product is not, it's not a big ask on my part.
Yeah.
And I promise to support it. I'll come and demo it. I will work harder than anyone. And I promise, like, if you just give me a shot. And they came back and said like, okay, all right, we're gonna give you a shot. So
that's great.
So it's like, it's the piece of like, also when you hear no, sometimes not always just taking it and turning around and walking away.
Wait, let me ask this question. I don't feel pressure to do this.
Yeah.
But you should say the name of that store, because ultimately that is a good story. It does put them in a good light, and maybe people will go there and buy it. So it looks good, you know. But yeah. You don't have to if you don't want to.
Yeah. We're gonna be promoting that store and the other local retailers. So one of the first local retailers that brought us onto shelf was Redbird Market.
I know those ladies.
That is the first.
Pretty good.
Yeah. And
do you know that I had to sleep with someone to make that happen? I'm just kidding. That was a bad joke. I'm sorry. That was not good.
Yeah. It was so in brand, like so many people will tell you that like whether you're fundraising or working in retail, like the first domino has to fall. And if it doesn't fall, none of the rest fall. And so I saw it in the fundraising side, like once that first check came in and National Cortina and John Ledestri came in, bang, all of a sudden, you know, the fire was started and it burned hotter and hotter. The same thing with retail. I had called and called and talked and called and but once Redbird took us on, I had an anchor. And it was like, well, we're over at Redbird. Oh, okay. Well, the people at Redbird believed in you. So then Niblack Foods said, you know what? We believe in you too. Let's take it on. Yeah. And then Three Brothers Winery and then Boza Pasta and then Dell's Market. And one by one by one, they started coming on. And then the same thing on the larger scale. Since we last spoke, we onboarded with Rainforest. So distribution up and down the East Coast.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and we were fortunate enough to pick up ShopRite, Fairway, and Gourmet Garage.
Oh, my God.
So 45 stores in the New York City, New Jersey, kind of downstate
region. You're off to the races, man.
Yeah. And so for me, that represents that next domino on the big retail side. And, you know, we're hoping that over the next couple months with Rainforest, we're able to get into more and more smaller, independent. We really want to stay true to the strategy that I've been telling everyone, which is regional, not growing too fast, being intentional about, you know, growing.
Deep, not wide, right?
Exactly.
Like stores that you can truly service.
Yep.
Brian Nicholson was on this podcast a couple months ago, Red Jacket, right? And he had gotten into a bunch of Publix, I think, in the Miami area at one point. And I asked him, I go, how did you succeed in Publix, or how did you do it? And you have to listen back, because I'm just paraphrasing and I don't remember exactly what he said. But basically what he said was, he said, we didn't at first. We didn't do well at first, because you have to, you can't overextend. You have to be in enough stores that you can, as I should say, you have to be in a few enough amount of stores that you can actually be present for those stores while you're still building. And so then he went back to the drawing board and told a story about going back and saying, hey, how about just 6 stores in that area? That way I can get around and demo, which is the name of the game, right?
Yeah. I've noticed like when I've been out demoing, and I haven't been in, I think my Redbird demo is scheduled this weekend.
Yes.
And then they were...
What time? Since this comes out right now, it's a timely plug.
It's 11 to 2 Fantastic. On Saturday the 23rd.
Yes.
And then they were so kind as to offer me some time during the Fairport Canal Days.
By the way.
Which is awesome.
Can I just say... A lot of times, maybe this is a little too behind the scenes, but a lot of times they have to like beg people to come do demos. But Canal Days, everybody comes out of the woodwork. Oh, we'd love to do a demo at your store on Canal Days.
Yeah.
So like I've been hearing the behind the scenes of very selective about who comes during Canal Days.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for it. Like I know that. So
That's a big one.
2 weeks ago on Saturday, I demoed at Niblack Foods in the Genesee Regional Market. And in 4 hours, I sold 65 bars.
Hell yeah, bro.
So, you know, it's a matter. And then it's funny. I've now done 2 demos at Niblack. And Kim over there, the store manager, is amazing. She's like, Tom, number one, she's like, I watched you come out from behind your demo table 3 times to show people where products were in our store. I don't know how you know where they are. And she was like, and number two, our customers love you. She's like, we've had so many people that have commented on what a positive experience you are greeting. And I said, well, it's a little bit of an unfair advantage. It's like I volunteer at my church on the first impressions committee. I'm a greeter.
I'm a professional greeter.
I got a little bit of training. Yeah. You know?
You're also a professional food guy. Like, you've been around this world for so long that you're so good at it that that's just going to come naturally.
And I love people.
And so customer service, your sales.
I love people. So when I see them come in the door and I see an opportunity, like in my head, I'm like, I have an opportunity to meet a new person, show them my product that I'm super excited about, and hopefully leave them with a very positive experience of coming into the store. Right. Like, I'm an extension of the store by being there and demoing. So I love it. Like, I love it. I love it, other than it does obviously take away a chunk of your weekend from your family. But like last time I was at NYBLAC, my wife and daughter came down and visited me, and they got to see me like working in the wild. It was pretty great. So I know that the demoing definitely helps in getting a lot of products sold. And so I want to make sure that we're able to service, like you said. And
Can I just say, in regards to going deep and not wide, not only do demos help you sell product in the moment, but you also get long-term customers out of demos. Because when somebody met you and you spend 2 minutes talking to them, and they're talking to the person, like, you made that bar, you developed that bar, you can tell them about making that bar in your home kitchen. And people love that. So when they meet you and they talk to you and they have your full attention for 2 minutes, then they buy that bar and they enjoy the bar. That's just lifelong buy-in now. And then that people tell stories for years when they see that on the shelf. Like, I've met that guy. I know that guy.
Yeah.
I've met that guy.
Yeah.
So that's why a demo is so important. It's not just one sale. It's like a lifetime customer.
Yeah, it was. It's been very cool. And one of the things that has happened that I didn't expect is, like, you know me, the collaborator. So I'm there repping Mocha. And I had one day, and, you know, NYBLAC is a little bit different because it's a real foodie. It's a lot of, like, unique ingredients and stuff you can't just get anywhere. So you have a lot of, like, creators and chefs and foodies that are coming in to buy unique ingredients. I ended up meeting three entrepreneurs themselves that are developing three of their own food products.
Oh, wow.
Completely different. And through the conversation of demoing for Mocha, I was able to hook up with them and offer them some mentorship and some help on the entrepreneurship side to say, hey, I think if you talk to this person, connect with that organization. Like, one lady, she's starting an ice cream business out of Hilton, but she didn't know about the Dairy Runway program. So I hooked her up with Amanda and then made a couple of other connections and had an hour call with her after the demo. And I was like, wow, that is such a, I mean, I don't know if that happens to everybody because I have a little bit of a different background than most food founders, but it was like a double whammy. It was enjoyment of showing off the product and then meeting people that are in the same space or maybe even a little bit younger than where we are, and then sharing the resources that I've picked up through Mocha and through my career to be able to help them advance what they're trying to do.
Has there been anything in the last couple months since we last spoke through this launch of Mocha that has actually been very challenging? Something that was hard that you maybe didn't think was going to be hard? You didn't see that coming? Anything you want to talk about? It's up to you.
Everything.
All of it. It's just all harder than people
know. Yeah. It's all way harder than anybody thinks. I think one of the big things for us has been the challenge of temperature control. So with the weather warming, we launched on Amazon in early April and we're FBA, for those that don't know, fulfilled by Amazon, and they don't put cold packs in the product. They're just going to ship it in the thermal bubble pack that I've given them. And we had a whole bunch of product showing up to people's doors melted. The product is like chocolate in the fact that it melts around 80 degrees. And once it melts, obviously it loses some of its shape. It's not as beautiful as when it was molded, and the fat in the product can come to the surface. That's called bloom. And that looks like a white kind of chalky swirl. Nothing wrong with the product. Still tastes the same. Just doesn't look terribly appetizing.
And people don't know that. They think something's wrong with
it. So not the greatest look to have your launch on Amazon and like the tail end of April, having orders getting to people with melt and bloom. And so, you know, we've had to quickly figure out, like, okay, how do we slow that down and turn on FBM, fulfilled by merchant, and start packing with a cold pack? And then it's like, Well, is it a 6 ounce cold pack, a 10 ounce, a 12 ounce?
Right.
Is it 1 day, 2 day shipping?
And also fulfilled by merchant. Does that mean you?
Yeah. Well,
literally
not,
you?
Not no, because we have a great partner in Joe Bean, our coffee supplier. Yep. They also do our 3PL for us.
Oh, awesome.
Which is amazing. But yeah, still like, I had to buy them a deep chest freezer to hold the ice bricks and then get the ice bricks. And we've had to thank you to Tara and Melanie and Holly for allowing us to ship product to Texas and Florida, to get that, to figure out like, cause you know, like just cause you have a cold brick doesn't mean your product's going to make it through the shipping supply chain. So like we figured out like it's a 15 ounce brick packed this way. And you have to send it either next day or second day air. Otherwise, it never makes it. And then everything is just cost, right? Like, because you still end up with a melted bar. So, like, that's probably been the most recent, like, most difficult struggle.
Little things, man. People don't think of those little things, man. That's tough. Yeah, I get it. I mean, it's a million things like that have popped up for me over the years. It's crazy.
Yeah. But it's fun. I mean, those obstacles are fun to, like, work through. You know, I'd rather have obstacles of dealing with cold packs than it could be something much more serious or much more difficult. Like the difficult things, we've been fortunate, like, you know, the funding, fundraising, that stuff's gone well. We have a great champion at Whole Foods and, out at Expo West, we got a chance to meet with our good friend, John Lawson, and he introduced us to some other folks on the team and like, they got excited about the product and they introduced it to some really big names and really cool people in the industry. And so we've gotten a lot of great opportunities that have come through champions like Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. We were fortunate enough to do the Rochester Coffee and Chocolate Show in April, which was, it was great. 2,000 people came through. It's a trade show that tours 4 or 5 cities here in the Northeast. I don't know if you ever watched General Hospital.
I was more of a Bold and the Beautiful or Young and the Restless guy.
So I don't know why, but like I guess I watched it after school in high school.
Yeah.
I don't know. But one of the actresses from that that soap opera tours around with the coffee and chocolate show.
I kind of think you think I'm kidding.
Oh, you're a bit, you're
there was a period of time in my life. Victor? Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Young and the Restless, the fashion industry, and then Bold and the Beautiful was that was our show. That was a half hour one, man.
Yeah.
I remember Taylor had a big crush on Taylor, bro.
I think General Hospital because it was like Rochester.
Oh yeah, it was Rochester-esque. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So it was
my dad still watches Young and the Restless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't know that I've seen a soap opera in so long, but it's funny because that's where I knew her from. And my mom was like, oh, she's been on NCIS and she's been on this and that and the other. And I was like, oh, that's cool. But we ended up having 2,000 people show up. I sold like $1,000 worth of product.
Amazing.
In 6 or so hours. And it gave me an opportunity for the first time to have a large scale sampling and pitch.
Uh-huh.
And it really, one, validated that what I have is a winner and people like it. But two, there were some little things that I learned from it. Like, for example, you know, the original product is called Dark Roast. And after that show, I realized Dark Roast has to go. Because I would say, would you like to sample our hero product, our original flavor, Dark Roast? And so many people were polarized by it. And they would say, oh, no, I don't drink Dark Roast coffee. I won't like that. And like, I named it Dark Roast because I thought it sounded fancy, you know, think of like Starbucks or like, you
tweak.
Know,
sure.
Yeah. Yep. And so the pivot there is calling it Signature Roast.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we're doing a packaging upgrade. We're getting ready to run another run here in June and the packaging is going to be updated. And one of the big updates on the original flavor is Signature Roast instead of Dark Roast.
Love that. Could I also maybe throw this out there? Have you noticed this? You did so much time. You did some fundraising, right, for this. And you run in circles of very high-level food people. I mean, you are the president of the New York State Food Processors, right? Like, you are talking to high-level food people. Did you notice that your pitch has to change when you're talking to the public?
Oh, yeah.
And this is going to sound... Well, I don't want to use the what I'm trying to say, but in an elegant way, is I'm trying to say it has to get dumbed down a little. I'm not trying to say the public's dumb. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying you are so used to having experts critique you. The public's just kind of like, yeah, is it good? Like, that's all they want to know. Is it good? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to like bring it down to the level of just like, I have 6 seconds to convince this person it's good.
It's been a totally different voice that has to be used. So.
Yeah.
fortunately, one of our advisors, Bev, she corrected me early on. She's like, Tom, I'm listening to how you're pitching this. And she goes, this is not the way that you're talking about the product works for a food professional, a food scientist, maybe, right. maybe an investor, but not even an investor, because most investors don't have technical background in your specific area. She's like, you got to figure out the brand voice. Like, the brand identity is great. So fortunately, Jessica, my co-founder, her boyfriend, Lenny, worked for Halo Top and Plenty and Rasa. So he's been with some really great brands, and that was his job. So for a very, very, very fair consulting fee, he ran a brand voice exercise with us, multiple workshops, put out a really nice large scale survey. We got all that data back, and we were able to curate the right voice for the consumer, the investor, so the retailer, right? Because these are, if you talk
different conversations.
Yeah, yeah. If you talk the same way to all three of those groups, you're gonna for sure alienate two of the three. And so that really helped. It also redefined some of our, like, how do we educate that it's coffee and not chocolate? Like, what are the right words? And what I thought was, before we did the survey, I thought what we were landing on was like the functionality, right? The caffeine, the low sugar, the high fiber, the prebiotic. I thought the better for you claim, because it's functional candy, I thought the better for you claim was the thing. And so I kept leading with that. And I'm like, why is this not converting with people? Like, what's going on? We ran that survey, and the survey came back that what resonated with consumers was that it's made from real coffee, mm-hmm. and it's real convenient. Those were the two simple. And here's me overshooting. Yeah. Like, you want to talk about the nutritional value and the functionality? It's like,
yeah, listen, we have Grow New York in common. And in our year in Grow New York, I had a call early on with somebody when all the other finalists were announced, and there were so many, you know, better for you and health and vegan, and I was like, Jesus, we've got none of that. You know, we're like, we make some of the stuff we make is just terrible for you. You know, like, we make, you know, it's none of, we've got none of these health claims. And I remember the guy that I was on the phone with was actually was our mentor that year, and he just said something. He's like, dude, like maybe 5 to 10% people, like, people just want to know if it's any good. Yeah. Just want to know if it's good.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, you say it's real convenient. It's real coffee. I always found it was like, people just want to know, is it good? What's it cost? Right? Like, those are the two just openers. Let me try it. It's good. Okay. What's it cost? Like, those are the two questions that I, it's so simple. It's such a complicated pitch at higher levels, but when it's the public, it's just so simple. Is it good, and what's it cost?
It's interesting too, because like on the product side, I thought for sure, I worked so hard to get it low sugar, low glycemic, 6 grams of sugar per bar, and it's coconut sugar and blah blah blah. And like,
people are like,
what I found out from the survey is that what people correlate with low sugar is bad taste. So here I am, like, it's low sugar, and what they're hearing is like, tastes terrible.
Yes.
And so and then the other thing I learned was, from a conversion to buy aspect, low sugar is an aspirational goal, right? It's like, I want to eat less sugar, mm-hmm. but people don't convert to buy necessarily. The majority of people, it's like a New Year's resolution, right? It's like, yeah. you have the best of intention, but you're not going to follow through and necessarily buy,
yes.
because it's low sugar.
Same with gluten-free.
Yeah.
By the way, like, I just did a thing on Monday yesterday. The girl that we ordered lunch, and this girl ordered from this certain cafe because they had gluten-free. And I just, what went through my head, she's like, do you want your wrap gluten-free? And what went through my head was like, no.
No, I paid for the gluten. I wanted it in there.
I'll take your
extra. I don't have an intolerance. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we are gluten-free and vegan, which is great. And I was leaning into those things too. But like, at the end of the day, what we learned from that survey was that people are going to buy the product based on it being real coffee and being convenient. And so that's kind of, we've shifted and focused. You'll now start seeing on our taglines, all coffee, period, no chocolate, and coffee minus the cup. Because we're trying to get to people, because if you just taste it and you think it's a chocolate bar, it's an okay chocolate bar, right? But it's not a chocolate bar. And where I see the light bulb going off in people's heads is when they realize the innovation is that it's made from coffee.
Yeah.
That's when the spark hits. And so it's like, how do we do that on pack and through our marketing so that I don't, because I can't be there and stand in front of every consumer and say like, you're, when you look at this, it's going to look like chocolate. It's going to feel like chocolate. But remember, the innovation is that it's made from whole coffee.
Right.
Right. And like, I literally have to coach you through that. Otherwise, you know.
You know, the other thing I'm just trying to remember back to my big time demoing days is that I would always notice you can pick up nonverbal cues from the public too. You know, they'll pick up your package and you'll see somebody will flip right to the ingredients, and that's the person you start talking to about ingredients. Then somebody else will flip right to the nutrition. That's the person you talked about the nutrition. And then other people are looking at the front. That's the people that you tell about how delicious it is. Yeah. You just start to pick that up. You're so good at it though. You're I mean, look at all that progress in just those couple of months. Think about where you'll be in a couple of years. The other thing you did one time that I thought was great was in the podcast, I think you did it, where we were talking about the hockey stick. A lot of people, when they start their businesses, it's like, I'm pre-revenue this year, and in 2 years, $500 million, right? Like, which is a one in a zillion shot at that. Yeah. It happens. Those stories end up on TV, but it's a one in a zillion chance. You told me you were like, I have a 10-year plan to be, what did you say again? I think it was like, it wasn't profitable, was it? Or was it profitable? It was like, I have a 10-year plan to be successful. And I was like, holy shit, that's so realistic. Yeah. It's so real.
Yeah, yeah. My goal was like, if I start this at 46, that by 56, I would be successful and exited. But like, knowing it's going to take a decade of dedication.
But a lot of people think that's going to take 18 months. Yeah. You know it's going to take 10 years.
Yeah.
That is so realistic of a number.
Yeah.
So many people think that's a
That is the other piece, like when talking to investors. And by the way, speaking of investors, since we talked last, Launch New York came in as an investor in the brand. So we're pretty excited about that. They've been a really great resource. But that's what we talk about with investors about de-risking. You're dealing with people that are proven operators. So we understand the runway needed. We understand the funding needed. We understand a lot of the details that early stage emerging brands and founders, they struggle with. And the way that you learn is by scraping your knee, falling down, scraping your knee, and doing it again and again and again. So we've de-risked it. Like we're not saying we're never gonna scrape our knee, but we're gonna scrape them a lot less than someone that's just coming to it fresh.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're feeling
also very, you're in your mid 40s, right?
47.
So there's a statistic out there, and I'm going to get it wrong, but it might be 49, I think. But basically, the most successful founders are in their 40s.
Oh, nice.
That's another
thing. Well, look, I got two things going for me. I was a C student.
Well, I listen to a podcast called How I Built This, and I know that I share a lot of listeners with them because people who listen to this always tell me they love How I Built This. But that's like my favorite podcast, and that guy is always touting that stat because there is this unfortunate sort of like stereotype that founders should be 22 years old.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, a founder stands a much better chance of being successful if they're 42 or 52 than if they're 22.
Yeah, 22 years old. And the other one that gets me, you know, you hear this coming out of VC a lot is, well, we want our founders to be 100% in. This can't be a side hustle. You can't have a day job. And I'm like, okay, well, as a single income household, if you want to pay my mortgage, like if you got $5 million to invest in Mocha, I can pay myself a salary to cover the family expenses.
But yeah,
like,
make that happen tomorrow. Yeah, invest.
Otherwise, like, hey, I'm going to have to work 80 hours a week and I'm going to have to work multiple jobs in order to be able to support my family and support the brand. And I think what I'd love to see change in the shift is like, I see that as like a general statement. But like, evaluate people individually. Don't judge a book by its cover. Like, you don't know the type of workhorse you're getting or the drive, dedication, and grit that you're getting.
Right.
From an individual, like maybe 9 out of 10 that aren't 100% bought in, maybe they didn't have the grit and the work ethic, but you'd be passing up the Tom Seymours in that group.
Exactly, you know? Dude. Nobody has any idea. And even people listening to this who don't know you personally might not realize you are a fucking hustler. Like, people always tell me all the time I am. You're somebody I look at and I go, I can't even hold a candle to that guy in terms of how much he hustles. And could you imagine having some freaking VC tell you that you're not working hard enough because it's not like you?
Yeah.
You?
Yeah.
80 hour a week, Tom is going to, you're just not all in, Tom. Sorry about that. Like, that is a crazy, you're so right. It can't be a blanket statement.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be, I would get so frustrated.
So all I got to do is I got to share my Whoop data.
Do it.
You know, I'm wearing my tracker.
Oh, yeah.
And,
you mean in the meeting.
Yeah,
oh,
it tracks the sleep, right? Oh, so yeah. Like all I got to do is like when I get in front of a VC is be like, do you want to know how much I work? Here, let me show you. This is tracking my biometrics. You can tell I'm stressed out 20 hours a day. You can see I slept 4 hours and you see my stress and strain over 20 hours is pretty high. Right? Like that. I mean, if anyone ever has a question about the hours and the effort, like that's what I do love about this Whoop is that it'll show you the biometrics behind what's going on inside the body. It doesn't lie.
Saturday, Redbird Market, 11 to 2. Go see them in Fairport this Saturday. And then also you're in a bunch of other stores, Niblack, you said, in Henrietta. You've got Dell's in Greece. What are a couple of the other highlights?
Boza Pasta, Three Brothers Winery.
Love it.
We're on Fair for those that have small shops and want to buy and bring it in that way. We're also on a great platform called Grovara. If you don't know Peter and the team at Grovara, they are turning food distribution on its head. They're an e-platform distributor that can go into any grocery or retail. So it's like Fair, but not intended for boutiques and gift shops, but like for full-scale retail and grocery.
Wow, yeah.
And they've been amazing. Like they've been a great partner. They've brought some really outstanding opportunities. So you can find it on Grovara. You can find it on Fair, Amazon, our website. We're coming soon to TikTok Shop. Be launching here very soon. As well as walmart.com. So keep an eye out.
Mocha Energy, M-O-K-A. Mocha Energy Coffee Bean Bar. Thank you. Do I get to keep these two?
Yeah.
Bars
for
your eyes? So this is my next 2 days. It's going to be my jolt. There actually, we have an all-team meeting this Friday. I'm going to eat one of these right before that meeting on Friday.
You know what I got to get involved with is the corporate challenges, you know, and pass these out and then like watch people like just like
crush it in the 5K. Yeah, you're right. All right, bro, I got to get going.
Yes.
My son is in an art show tonight.
Oh, beautiful.
He had his art teacher actually selected his – he made a like a sculpture of Yoshi from Super Mario.
Oh, very cool.
And it got selected, so we got a big art
show.
Where's
the art show?
It's at Brighton Middle School.
Oh, very cool.
And then after that, buying pizza for the whole damn neighborhood.
Nice. I'm not sure why, but in
Greece, my wife volunteered that, by the way.
In Greece, the art show ends up at Greece Ridge Mall.
Oh, yeah?
Which is super interesting to me, but it must be because there's like four huge schools in Greece.
Yeah.
And the only place they can put all the art is in the mall.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. Pizza, where's the pizza coming from?
So my son loves Giorgio's Pizza in Pittsford Plaza.
I don't think I've ever had it.
So it's like an open invite to everybody to come to Giorgio's. So I get to see how much pizza I get. My wife just invites everybody. She just invites everybody.
Do you make their pizza sauce?
No. I don't even know. I go in incognito. But they do make good pizza, though. You know what I've been doing lately? Well-done pizza. I learned that because I got into Carbone's. I really like Carbone's on the west side now. And I do a well-done pizza, and I've been ordering all my pizza well-done, and it's hitting. I like it.
I just started getting on the trend. My friends own a brand out of the Brooklyn Navy Yard called La Rossi Pizza.
Mm.
And it's a Italian-style pizza and they explained this to me. In Italy, they don't load the pizza with sauce and cheese and toppings like we do. They don't go overboard. It's like a much lighter topped pizza so that you get the proper ratio of topping and crust and cheese and sauce.
Nice.
So I've been seeking out simpler, lighter topped pizzas because I do find it to be an elevated pizza experience.
I lived in Italy for a year, and what I remember ordering pizza is that you could get, they had a very wide range of toppings, but it wasn't really like you would think here. It's not like, here's the pizza and here's the choice of toppings. It was like, what do you want on it? We'll put it on there. And so my friends in Italy would get French fries on cheese pizza.
Oh, wow.
And I started doing that. It's freaking delicious, man.
Ah.
Man, I remember it was one of the first things I learned how to say. Una pizza con quattro formaggi, four cheese, right? Una pizza con quattro formaggi e le patatine fritte, per favore. Which meant a four cheese pizza with French fries on it. And that's how you get this build, Tom. This is how you get built like this.
You start
young with that kind of food.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah, thank you for everything you do for me, too.
Thanks. You are such a kind a friend. You've recommended us to so many people and said nice things about us. I'm so appreciative of that.
It's what life's about, man. I've been telling people lately that if you get to the finish line with full pockets and an empty heart and you're by yourself, you're not going to measure that as success, and you're not going to be happy. So it's equally about making money as it is filling our heart and bringing other people along with us. And so I'm honored that I get the opportunity to do that for other people. And so many people have done that for me. So I'm just kind of paying it forward.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah.
Hey, listeners, is your morning cup of coffee tasting a little less flavorful than you expected? The secret to a great cup is starting with fresh beans. And at Joe Bean Roasters, they roast and ship daily, so you get super fresh coffee every single time. If you want to level up your morning routine, check out their new Guide to Brewing Better Coffee at Home, which covers everything from grind size to water quality. You can get cheap shipping straight to your door or choose convenient local pickup at Joe Bean or at Peppermint. Head to JoeBeanRoasters.com and use the promo code LUNCHADOR10 at checkout for 10% off your order. Thanks to Joe Bean for sponsoring the Lunchador Podcast Network.
This is Evan Dawson. If you like conversations that take you beyond the headlines, join me on Connections. Every day, we dig into the issues shaping Rochester with the people living them, researching them, even trying to change them. No hot takes, no shouting most of the time. Just real conversations that keep you involved in your community. Listen to Connections wherever you get your podcasts.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.